ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
Canto 7, Chapter 2, Chapter entitled Hiranyakashipu, King of the Demons, Verse 43.
Yatha analo
darushu,
yatha analo darushu bhinna iyate, yatha anilo deha gatah prithak sthitah, यथा नभः सर्वगतं न सज्जते तथा पुमान् सर्वगुणाश्रयः परः।
Translation and purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Translation: As fire, although situated in wood, is perceived to be different from the wood, as air, although situated within the mouth and nostrils, is perceived to be separate, and as the sky, although all-pervading, never mixes with anything, so the living entity, although now engaged within the material body, of which it is the source, is separate from it. Purport.
In Bhagavad Gita, the Supreme Personality of Godhead has explained that the material energy and spiritual energy both emanate from Him. The material energy is described as me bhinna prakriti rashtada, the eight separated energies of the Lord. But although the eight gross and subtle material energies, namely earth, water, fire, air, ether, mind, intelligence and false ego, are stated to be bhinna, separate from the Lord, actually they are not. As fire appears separate from wood, and as the air flowing through the nostrils and mouth of the body appears separate from the body, so the Paramatma, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, appears separate from the living being, but is actually separate and not separate simultaneously. This is the philosophy of Achintya Bheda Bhed propounded by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. According to the reactions of karma, the living being appears separate from the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but actually he is very intimately related with the Lord. Consequently, even though we now seem neglected by the Lord, he is actually always alert to our activities. Under all circumstances, therefore, we should simply depend on the supremacy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and thus revive our intimate relationship with Him. We must depend upon the authority and control of the Supreme Personality of Godhead.
Hare Krishna, I seek the blessings of all the assembled devotees to be able to speak something worthwhile for the purification of my filthy heart and for the glorification of the Lord. So today we are discussing from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Hiranyakashipu, King of the Demons. So we'll discuss this in two parts. First part we'll discuss about the purpose for which knowledge is spoken determines the effect that it will have. And second we will focus on the translation, the purport. So Hiranyakashipu is preaching the same message that Lord Krishna has spoken in the Bhagavad Gita. We are different from the body, and we should be detached from the body. But his goal is just to continue on his sense gratification. So in the 13th chapter, 18th verse, Lord Krishna says that Jnanam Gyeyam Jnanagamyam Rudhi Sarvasya Vastitam. So he says three things. That Supreme Lord is Jnanam. He is himself the knowledge. Gyeyam, he is the object of knowledge. And Jnanagamyam, he is the goal of knowledge. Now, this is sometimes not very easy to understand. What are the three things? Now, in the Srimad Bhagavatam, in the prayers of Gajendra, 8th canto, 3rd chapter, 12th verse, he says, Namo Jnana Ghanayacha. So, Namo Jnana Ghanayacha. Srila Prabhupada writes in the purport, he quotes Bahunam Janmanamante 7.19, and he says that when the knowledge of the transcendentalist becomes condensed, then he becomes a devotee. So knowledge itself is a form of God. In the Bible it is said that in the beginning was the Word, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. So Jnanam, so the Supreme Lord is himself the Jnanam. Then Gyeyam, Gyeya is the object of knowledge. Now the words object of knowledge and next Jnanagamya, the goal of knowledge, they appear similar. But
there the goal will come to later. Object here means the topic or the subject that we are studying. So gyeya. So the subject which is being studied in transcendental life is the Supreme Lord. But just as in academics, a student may study engineering. That is his gyeya, his object of studies. But what is jnana gamya? His the salary that he will get after earning a job. So he's studying a particular subject, that is his gyeya, but his jnana gamya, the goal of his studies is different. The goal is not just the knowledge, but the goal is the fruit that will come from the knowledge. But in the spiritual life, when we study gyeya, the gyeya is Krishna, and jnana gamya, the goal by studying Krishna is that we will develop love for Krishna. And that's why in the 18.65 Manmana Bhava Mad Bhakto purport, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains that in one sense the two appear same. Man mana, think of me. And bhava mad bhakto, become my devotee. So what is the difference, he says? He says even the jnanis and the yogis do man mana. They also think of Krishna. But their purpose of thinking of Krishna is to become more detached from the material world and then achieve their respective goal of merging in the Brahman. So for them jnana is Krishna, but their jnana gamya is the Brahma Jyoti. Therefore, man mana bhava mad bhakto. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says that. Krishna says, don't think of me like a yogi or a jnani. Think of me so that you become my devotee. So here we see that Hiranyakashipu's jnana, the subject that he is studying, not only studying, he is teaching. That is spiritual knowledge. But his jnana gamya is what? I will kill Vishnu. And I will become immortal and I will enjoy this world. So therefore, along with the study of knowledge, the purpose for which one is studying is very important. Otherwise, the desired effect will not come up. So now, let's compare in the Srimad Bhagavatam and the Bhagavad Gita, how different people have given knowledge, and there are different personalities who have received that knowledge. And what is the difference? Here we have Hiranyakashipu speaking to the relatives of Hiranyaksha. Then later on in the 10th canto, we have Vasudev speaking to Kamsa. And of course in the Bhagavad Gita, we have a double dialogue. We have Krishna speaking to Arjuna. And we also have Sanjay speaking to Dhritarashtra. So, now let's go to the 10th canto. Vasudev speaks this knowledge at a very dramatic and potentially disastrous juncture. When Kamsa has caught the hair of Devaki, he's unleashed his sword and is about to behead the same sister for whom he was carrying the who was driving the chariot, because he heard the Akashvani that her 8th son will be the cause of your death. So at that time Vasudev preaches, and let's see the way Vasudev is talking about the spiritual knowledge. He tells that, you know, oh Kamsa, you're not the body or the soul, and the body is temporary. And then he says, when the body is destined to die, the destiny is going to work. You cannot escape destiny. So why are you struggling to, why do you want to do sinful activities to try to change your unchangeable destiny? Now interestingly, Vasudev doesn't think that if Devaki is destined to die, then she will die. Why should I try to protect her? Is it true? Is he being inconsistent in the application of philosophy? No. The purpose of philosophy is to solidify our conviction to practice our duty to Krishna and to all living entities in relationship with Krishna. So, the knowledge of destiny doesn't mean that one becomes irresponsible and give up on duty. So, the difference between the concept of destiny, that if Devaki is destined to die, she will die. So, what is the use of Vasudev trying to protect? No, even if there is knowledge of destiny, the Vedic culture teaches that we should do our duty. And the difference between Vasudev and Krishna Kamsa is that Vasudev is sticking to his duty, whereas Kamsa, in trying to killing his sister, is deviating from his duty. So what Vasudev is telling Kamsa is, if everything is destined and you cannot change it, then better stick to your duty and accrue the punya that comes from that, rather than deviate from the duty and suffer to avoid something which we cannot avoid. So, destiny doesn't mean that one becomes negligent or irresponsible. So now, of course, Vasudev spoke, but Kamsa did not relent. It is described in the Bhagavatam that Kamsa was neither pacified nor terrified by the knowledge. So interesting, pacified or terrified. That means either he understands, okay, everything is inevitable, so why should I, that becomes peaceful. But terrified means if you understand that there are so many sinful reactions that are going to come to me, so better let me not do anything sinful. But he was neither pacified nor terrified. Then of course we know that Vasudeva adopted another emergency measure by saying that, I'll bring the sons. So here we see, there is an instructor and there is an instructed. So the instructor was in proper consciousness, doing his duty and trying to save Devaki and enlighten Kamsa. But the instructed was not submissive. And so the instructed did not get any benefit. Now in the Bhagavad Gita, Prabhupada says, it is the ideal teacher and the ideal student. So Krishna is the instructor. And we say, at the end of Bhagavad Gita, what happens? Nashto moho smutir labdha tat prasadatmaya achyuta. So actually Vishwanatha Chakra Thakur explains that as Krishna is speaking to Arjuna, the more Krishna is speaking, Krishna's heart is also being overwhelmed with love. And that's why when just towards the end of the Bhagavad Gita, if we see 18.63-64, just before Sarvadharman Parityaja comes, so Krishna actually in one sense 18.63, he completes his message. He says, Iti te jnanam akhyatam guhyat guhyataram maya vimrishyaita dasheshena yatheshya sisatakuru. He says, now I have given you my knowledge. Knowledge that is more confidential than what I had given before. Now deliberate on it and decide what to do. And Arjuna is in deep thought. He has heard about karma yoga, jnana yoga, ashtanga yoga, bhakti yoga, and doesn't know what to do. And seeing Arjuna in that very thoughtful, grave mood, Krishna's heart becomes overwhelmed with compassion, compassionate love. And he says, you don't have to worry about this. I will tell you what you should do. He says, Sarva guhyatamam bhuya shrunume paramam vacha ishtosime drudamiti tato vakshamite hitam. So he says, now I will tell you the most confidential knowledge. Why? Ishtosime drudamiti. That because you are very dear to me. So, drudami, ishta means to love. And drudha means determined. So, the Lord is determined to love the living entity no matter how much the living entity rebels against him. There is nothing that we can do by which we can stop Krishna from loving us. Nothing that we can do. Of course, if we offend his devotee, then he becomes a little angry and we may have to suffer the reactions. But Krishna, nothing that we can do. So, ishto sime drudhamiti, Krishna says, I am determined to love you. So, when we see then the conversation between the instructor and the instructed, the more the instructor gives and the instructed is submissive, then the instructor also becomes filled with love and joy. And what happens to Arjuna? He says that Karishye Vachanam Tava. I will get up and fight. And the last verse in the Bhagavad Gita, Dhanur Dharaha. The first chapter of the Bhagavad Gita ends with Visrujya Sasaram Chapam Shoka Samvigna Manasa. He says, he puts aside his bow and he says, I will not fight. No Yotsyaiti Govinda Uktva Tushnim Babhuvaha. I will not fight. But at the end, Arjuna takes up his bow and is ready to fight. So now, the bow of Arjuna represents the determination of the living entity. So by the upheavals of this world, the determination may become weakened. But by hearing the instruction of the Lord, the determination becomes reinstated. So here, there is the ideal situation where there is the compassionate instructor and there is the submissive instructed. And both become filled with love and joy, in one sense. Now, going to the outer dialogue in the Bhagavad Gita, we have Sanjay and Dhritarashtra. So here, Sanjay, he starts the Bhagavad Gita in this first chapter, and then he speaks around 3-4 times in the Bhagavad Gita. And at the end, again he speaks from 73 to 78 verses. And there, it's very interesting, his consciousness. Now, of course, here Dhritarashtra is not submissive. He's too attached. And although he hears the message, but he is not benefited. But still, even if the instructed is not benefited, what happens to the instructor? That is very interesting to see. So there, he says that in 74, 75, 76, 77, those verses, he goes on and says, first, Vyasa Prasada Shrutvan Etad Guhyam Ahamparam Yogam Yogeshwarat Krishna Sakshat Kathayata Swayam. So it's very amazing. Sanjay is speaking this, but he's saying Vyasa Prasadat Shrutuvan. He's speaking it, but he's saying, I have heard this by the mercy of Vyasadev. Because he's not just speaking this knowledge, he's hearing it himself also. And what happens by that? So, because he's a transparent via media for the message that is coming from Krishna, just by being a transparent via media, two things he says. He says that it is by the mercy of Vyasadeva that I have heard it. And what is the result of that? He says, Tatcha samsmritya samsmritya samvadamim adbhutam keshavarjuna yo punya rishyami cha muhurmuhu. He says, I have become ecstatic. Rishyami. So even if the instructed is not submissive, but if the instructor is giving the knowledge in a mood of service, then the instructor himself becomes ecstatic by that. He's remembering his spiritual master and Rishyami cha muhurmu. Two, three verses this comes. First he says, Adbhutam Roma Harshanam. This, my hair are standing on them. Rishyami cha muhurmu. Then again he says, Rajan samsmritya samsmritya. Rishyami cha punha punha. Again and again I am being filled with ecstasy. So this is the nature of spiritual knowledge, that we, when we transmit it in the mood of service, then irrespective of whether it has effect on others, we are transcendentally inspired by that. But on the other hand, let us see what is happening here. Here, in one sense, the instructed is submissive. The relatives of Hiranyaksha, they hear and they transform. But the instructor is not compassionate. He is passionate. And so, those who receive the message are transformed, at least temporarily, but he himself is not transformed. It's amazing how this happens. So therefore, Jnanam Jnayam Jnanagamyam. Now the Jnaya, we are studying spiritual knowledge, but what is the goal of that study? The goal is Krishna, then there is the purification and the fulfillment that comes by that. Of course, in modern society, when people study, they don't even study Krishna, and their goal is also not Krishna. So modern education is like a prisoner studying everything about the prison. The wall, the floors, everything, the bars, except the way out. He studies everything about the prison, but he doesn't study how to get out of the prison. So like that, modern education, people study about so many things. They study about the way grass grows. They study about how distant objects are moving. But they study how to get us out of ourselves, out of the material world. Now, coming to this particular verse, this is a continuation of yesterday's verse. So, in the yesterday's verse, the example was given as a person who owns a house, identifies himself with the house, although he is not the house. And now to explain how there is a difference, these three examples are given. Of how something subtler may be present in something gross, but it doesn't get entangled. Yatha analo darushu prithak iyate. He says that just as fire is present in the wood, but the fire and the wood are different. Aur yatha anilo deha gatham prathak sthitah. There is air present all over the body. There are the five vayus which keep moving up and down, and that's how our life goes on. And third he goes, yatha nabha sarvagatam nasajjate. That there is the ether that is present everywhere, but it doesn't get entangled. Now the same concept comes in the Bhagavad Gita 13th chapter, the concluding verses, where Krishna explains, 32, 33, 34 verses, especially 33rd verse, the same analogy comes as the third analogy over here. Yatha sarvagatam saukshmyad akasham no palipyate sarvatravasthito dehe tathatma no palipyate. He says, just as ether is present everywhere, but doesn't get entangled. Similarly, the soul is present in the body, in all different bodies, but the soul doesn't become entangled. Now, of course, in the 13th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita is very similar to the Upanishads. And the Upanishads, the perplexity is whether the word Atma refers to the Jivatma or the Paramatma. That is always ambiguous. And so we need the Acharya's commentaries to decipher. Of course, Vishwanatha Thakur says that in that sequence, Krishna talks about Sarvataha Pani Padam Tat Sarvataha Kshishiro Mukham, that everywhere are his hands and legs. So that section refers to the Paramatma. And this section, he says, refers to the primarily to the Jivatma. So there, it's interesting. Krishna gives two examples. Na karoti, na lipyate. Anadityatvan, nirgunatvan. Paramatma yamavyaya. He says, the soul, although he's in the body, he's in the material world, he's beyond time and space. Anadityatvan, nirgunatvan. Beyond time, beyond space. Avyaya, again, same thing. And the first example he gives is this one. That there's the ether that is present in water and in space doesn't get attached or influenced by that. But then we see that the soul does influence the body. And the soul is influenced also by the body. The soul influences the body means, right now, say I'm talking, all of you are hearing. So this is because the soul is present. So how does that happen? And in the next verse, Krishna gives an interesting example. He says, Yatha prakashyate kah krishnam lokam imam ravi kshetram kshetristah krishnam prakashyate bharatam. Beautiful example. He says, just as the sun is completely separate from the earth and they are far away, they are not connected. But just by the presence of the sun, all the activity on the earth goes on. Similarly, he says, and just by the presence of the soul in the body, all the activity in the body goes on. And the purpose of understanding the difference that the soul and the body are different is to develop detachment. So, Vishwanatha Thakur says that 13.22, Purusha Praktisthehi Bhungte Prakritichangudan, that is the Mahavakya of the Bhagavad Gita. He says that Vakya describes why the soul gets entangled. And this section describes how the soul can become disentangled. So, of course, Hiranyakashipu is speaking his message here for the purpose of detachment. That his relatives are attached to the body of Hiranyaksha. So the soul is different from the body. Why are you attached? And so when we talk about knowledge, although Hiranyakashipu is giving this message, you know, he is not at all interested in seeing whether the knowledge is fructifying in his own life. So, along with knowledge, as I was telling, the purpose of knowledge is very important. And this same theme has caused this teaching the knowledge but not explaining the purpose for which the knowledge is given, or not understanding and applying that. That has caused, to a large extent, misunderstanding and the downfall of the Vedic culture. When the Europeans came to India, they found in India there was a caste system. And they felt it was very discriminatory. And of course at that time, the Brahmanas had also become caste conscious. And what was the idea? They said that all of you are lower caste people. Why are you born in the lower caste? Because you are sinful. And therefore you deserve to be discriminated against. And you have to stay in a lowly position. So now, for many atheistic or skeptical people, the idea that we are suffering because of our karma appears very self-righteous. For example, you know, one of the strongest books against karma, I'm preparing a small book about karma, so by Prabhupada's mercy. So I was doing research, because karma is so logical, but why is it that so many people resent karma? So they were telling one story of a particular family, in which the daughter had passed away in an accident. And they went to the priest. And the priest told that, you know, because you are sinful, so the daughter passed away. And so this particular author writes that, you know, life had hurt them and religion was hurting them more. So he says, is this what is the purpose of religion? So there is knowledge. So people feel that, it's the skeptical people, they say that we use the principle of the spiritual knowledge of reincarnation and karma to justify and perpetuate the suffering of this world. So, therefore, one of the reasons why they give that reincarnation should not be accepted, karma should not be accepted is because deal with people as they are now in this life and help them if they are suffering. If we say that they are suffering because of their past karma, then that will dry up our compassion. So, this is a very, if at first sight this appears a very bewildering logic, So the knowledge of the law of karma is meant not so much as a causative principle, but as a curative principle. What is the difference? For example, say if a doctor sees a patient who has come and the patient is having some sexually transmitted disease, STD. Now the patient is in pain. And if the doctor is a self-righteous moral, hey, you rascal, you did the illicit activity, that's why you're suffering. No, that is not the way a doctor should be. But doctor should, first of all, you treat the patient. But the doctor's treatment will be incomplete if he doesn't tell the patient why he is suffering. So the knowledge of the cause of suffering is given not so much as a causative aspect, but as a, not so much for a causative purpose, but a curative purpose, to save him from future suffering. So unfortunately, and that is the mood in which Krishna also speaks. If we say, Mam hi partha vyapashritya, yepi syupapa yonayaha, sriyo vaishyastha shudras, tepi yanti param gatim. So some people feel, how, what is this, is value judgmental? Why does Krishna say, papa yonaya? They are sinful people. No, but that is not the emphasis of the verse. The verse emphasis is, that tepi yanti param gatim, even they can be delivered. So, if the knowledge of karma is, same spiritual knowledge is being talked about over here, if it is given for justifying in a self-righteous way, then it leads to unfortunate consequences. So, when Srila Prabhupada would preach, and Srila Prabhupada started a temple in Africa, so he called the temple Kirata Shuddhi Mandir. So now, in verses, Kirata is a very low caste. So it may appear as if, why is Prabhupada saying like, Kirata? But then it is Kirata Shuddhi Mandir. It is in that Prabhupada was probably thinking of Kirata Unandra Pulinda Pulakasha, that verse. And everybody can be purified by the mercy of the Lord. So when Brahmananda Maharaj went for the first time to preach over there, he found preaching to the Africans very difficult. And he was preaching to the Indians over there. And they were easy to become devotees. And then when Prabhupada told him he had to preach to the Africans, he said, Prabhupada, these Negroes, they will never become devotees. So Prabhupada told him something which shook him. He said, if you say like that, then for me you are a white Negro. For me you are a white Negro. That means, if Prabhupada wanted to see like that, even the whites are also fallen. They are Mlechas and Yavanas. So Prabhupada, yes, it was a factual reality that because of past karma, somebody may be born in a particular race or family. But that was not Prabhupada's emphasis. Prabhupada's emphasis was that we should give mercy to everyone. And we should not think that anybody is fallen, that they have to stay fallen. They cannot get the mercy. So Prabhupada was very compassionate, never self-righteous in his presentation of philosophy. He wanted to lift everyone up by his presentation. So otherwise, the self-righteousness in religious circles, whether it was in the Hindu dharma or in the other religions, that alienates thoughtful people. And that makes people averse to even hearing the philosophy. So there is philosophy and the purpose of philosophy. So the purpose of philosophy is to elevate people, curative purpose. Now coming to the purport, here Srila Prabhupada takes a slightly different dimension from the translation of the purport. In the translation, the emphasis of the body and the soul are different. But that is the theme that has been going on for several verses. Srila Prabhupada always gives a holistic understanding in his purports. And therefore, Srila Prabhupada shifts from the Atma to the Paramatma over here. And he gives an interesting point. He says that, Krishna says that, Bhinna me prakriti rishtita. But, so Prabhupada writes here, they are stated to be Bhinna, separate from the Lord. Actually, they are not. And he gives an interesting application of the Achintya Bhedavet philosophy. Generally, we talk of Achintya Bheda Bhed in terms of the soul and the super soul. They are one or they are different. Simultaneously one and different. But that same philosophy can also be applied to the relationship between the Lord and material nature. The Lord is one with and different from material nature. So, the same theme, actually this has been a historical philosophical debate that has been going on in Western circles. Now if you see thousands of years ago, there were the Greeks. And there are two main terms, Srila Bhaktivedanta Swami Thakur and the Harmonist, one of the articles analyzes this. The essay is called Immanence and Transcendence. So immanence means that God is present within material nature. And transcendence means that God is beyond material nature. He's transcendental. So he explained that the Gaudiya Vaishnava philosophy of Achintya Bheda Ved, it reconciles this immanence and transcendence, which has traditionally been a matter of dispute. So among the Greeks, they had various nature gods. They had a fire god, a sun god, a moon god, a forest god, earth goddess, like that. And subsequently, when Jesus Christ came and preached, then he said God is beyond this world. And he and his followers abolished the worship of all these nature deities. And they said these are just imaginations. They are just concoctions. So the Greek idea of God was immanent, that God is present within the material nature. Whereas the Christian idea is that God is transcendent. He is beyond material nature. But if God is completely beyond material nature, then that raises some serious questions. If he is beyond material nature, if he is disconnected with material nature, then how does he help his devotee who is trapped in material nature? So that they cannot very well answer, because the problem is that, like, if I was telling about the Judeo-Christian tradition, they don't accept karma. They say it is used to perpetuate suffering. But then what is the cause of suffering? So I was reading one book about this karma. So they say that we are suffering. People say, if God is in control, why are we suffering? So most people don't know that God is not in control of this world. Very shocking. God is not in control of this world. They say that this world is in control of Satan. So when Adam and Eve, when they rebelled against God, by their rebellion against God, they handed themselves over to Satan. And since then, you know, that rebellion is like a genetic defect that has been transmitted down. And all of us are now under the control of Satan. And Satan will naturally cause suffering to the devotees. But there will be a final battle, and at that time, God will win. But till then we have to endure suffering. And there is no causality in terms of actions and reactions. So this is a very peculiar doctrine. Why? Because this has resulted because their idea of God is transcendental. God is beyond material nature. Now of course the terms immanence and transcendence have been used and abused and misused. So I'm just giving a generic understanding. But the Vedic philosophy, if we see the Bhagavad Gita itself, the whole 10th chapter from verses 19 to 48 is all about immanence. Krishna says that Adityanam Ham Vishnur, Jyotisham Raviram Shuman, among the luminous objects I am the sun, Marichir Marutam Asmi. So that whole 10th chapter talks about how God is very much present within material nature. But then in the 8th chapter 20-21 also Krishna talks about transcendence. Parastasmatu bhavonyo vyakto vyakta sanatana. So God is beyond material nature also. That's why Prabhupada says, although he appears separate, he is not separate. So Krishna is not only immanent in the form of his man, of vibhutis, but he personally comes in this world. He personally comes as the avataras. That is, he comes and goes, but as the Paramatma, he is always there with us. And in that sense, he is always immanent within this world. So Srila Prabhupada, in a talk, he says, just like a wealthy man may have a dog. And the dog wants to go to the garden for a walk. He's happy in his home, but he wants to go for a walk. He wants to go. So the master goes with him. And the dog is running here, running there. And the dog is in the garden, in the dirt, and he's passing urine and stool. And the master is patiently waiting for him to finish his business, so that he will take him back to home. So Prabhupada says, similarly, you know, we are in this material world passing urine and stool, and the super soul is waiting for us to finish our business and to return back to him. So the Lord is very much present with us in this material world. And that's why Prabhupada goes on further to say that, consequently, even though we now seem neglected by the Lord, he is actually always alert to our activities. The 8th canto, the prayers of Manu, he says, Chakshur yascha narishyati. He says, the eyes of the Lord never blink, because he's always attentively seeing to the needs of everyone, and especially his devotees. So, the other aspect of Achintya Bheda Bheda is that we are one and different from the Lord. So we can be one in love, we are different in identity. And a devotee, when he is practicing Krishna consciousness, Prabhupada writes further that we should simply depend on the supremacy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and thus revive our intimate relationship with Him. So Kulashekhar Maharaj, in his prayers, he expresses how the supremacy of the Lord gives confidence to the devotee. He says, Ma bhir manna mano vichintaya bahudha yamishchiram yatina naivami prabhavanti paparipavah swami nanu shridharah alasyam vyapaneya bhakti sulabham dhyayasvanarayanam lokasya vyasanapanodan karo dasyasya kimnakshamah. So he says, how the supremacy of the Lord gives confidence in three ways to a devotee. He said, my dear mind, don't worry. Don't worry about what suffering will come. Manna mano vichinta. Don't do chinta. Why? He says, don't you know that naivami prabhavanti paparipavah. He says, whatever sins are there, you don't have to be afraid. Why? Because the Lord is the enemy of sins. Where the Lord is present, the sins won't be present. The sins will have to go away. And then he says, not only will the Lord remove misfortune, he says, nanu shridharah. He is the Lord of the goddess of fortune. So, how can any misfortune come in your life? Only if fortune will come. And then he goes further and he says, can't you see? Lokasya vyasanapanodan karo. Even those who are not here to become his devotees, they just come for material motives and pray to him, the Lord fulfills their prayers also. Dasyasya kim nakshamaha. So, will he not protect one who is trying to become his das and offer his life to him? So, he says, if there is any problem, he says, the only problem is alasyam, laziness. He says, become enthusiastic in serving the Lord. Alasyam vyapaniya bhakti sulabham dhyayasvanarayanam. He says, with enthusiasm, giving up laziness, meditate on Lord Vishnu and surrender to Him. So, by understanding the supremacy of the Lord, we understand that there is no problem that the Lord cannot solve. The Lord is supreme. He is bigger than all my problems, all my conditionings also. And He can overcome them. So, that gives confidence to a devotee. Now, the materialistic people, today, yesterday and today, they are celebrating New Year. So they say, Happy New Year. But they don't do actually anything new in life. So how will they become happy? Everything that they do is punha punash charvita charvanana. They are just doing eating, sleeping, mating and defending. Now of course it appears new. Prasangam ajaram pasham, the Bhagavatam says. The material attachments are such that, you know, there is jara, there is old age, but ajaram. The attachments never grow old. They appear as it is. Sense objects always appear new. And we keep trying to enjoy. But actually the same old activities. On the other hand, we see Yamunacharya, he says, Navanavarasya dhamanya udyatam rantum asit. He says, Yad avdhi mama cheta Krishna padaravinde. He says, ever since I have fixed my mind on Krishna, then what is happening? Navanavarasya dhamanya. I am enjoying in newer and newer ways. So, actually, if we want to become happy, we have to do something new. And the only new thing that the soul can do is actually turn to Krishna and take shelter of Krishna. And absorb himself in remembrance of Krishna. And that will lead to Navanavarasa Dhamanya Uddhitam Rantum Asit. So I remember in South India Yatra, Sadhanath Maharaj was speaking on this verse. And he said, this is such a beautiful realization. So now it struck me, Yamunacharya is saying that the beauty of this world is false and even distasteful. And Maharaj said that this realization that the beauty is false is a beautiful realization. So how is that? Because then, when we understand that the beauty of this world is false, then we can wholeheartedly become attracted to Krishna's beauty. And Kulashekhar Maharaj says, Gopi lochana chataka ambudamani. Beautiful analogy he gives. He says, just like the chataka bird. He waits for the drop of water to come. And not looking anywhere else for water. And therefore, when that water comes, that water is like a precious pearl for him. Similarly, he says, Gopi lochan, the eyes of the gopis, they are like the chataka bird and they want to behold only the form of the Lord. So, to the extent we fix our mind on Krishna, then the form of Krishna reveals himself as supremely beautiful. And that conquers our heart. And that is how there will be really a happy new year. So the world is wishing each other happy new year. But that remains only a wish. But by Srila Prabhupada's mercy, we have the process by which we can make not only our year, but our every day. And not only every day, every moment. Hushyami cha muhur mu. We can make it new and happy. So thank you very much. Grantharaj Srimad Bhagavatam ki. Srila Prabhupada ki. Gaura Bhaktavinda ki.